good afternoon and welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink, who got caught in traffic.
Hi, this is Patty Fink, and you're still listening made it. To Lambda Weekly.
And you still made it.
And still made it.
Squeaking in just as the theme song was coming on.
If you're on westbound 635 near approaching the High Five, it's very, very slow. There was an accident at Greenville and 635. So beware.
In news this week, some very sad news. David Mixner passed away.
Yes, and what a legend he is.
Yeah, he was a Clinton advisor. He was actually on our show a couple of times during the 90s.
That's amazing, an advisor to President Clinton on LGBTQ issues.
You know, I think he was responsible for getting Viv and Louise on Clinton's inaugural float.
That might be how that happened. Absolutely.
I know they were very active in Democratic politics, and their name rose in party circles. But I think it was David Mixner who got the name from those rising party circles to President Clinton to get them on the float, the family, our families or something.
I think it was like American Families or something like that.
So
it was a great loss. He has left a great legacy.
Yeah, he was also one of the founders of the Victory Fund, along with William Wayburn.
Who was from Dallas,
and was the first executive director of the Victory Fund. But, David Mixner, it was sad to hear. Do you know how we got him on the show? We used to broadcast the Pride Parade from the street.
Right. I covered that many times from the street.
And I'm walking down Wycliffe Avenue, and there in an open car was David Mixner. So, you know, hi, I'm Dave Taffet from Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm standing next to David Mixner. Say hello to our audience, you know, and put the mic in front of him, and he started talking. And then one time was, I think he might have been in the studio.
We've had some very interesting people over the years in the studio. I remember one of the funniest ones was the actor Dan Butler over at what we used to call the Crack House. Mm-hmm. We now call it the Crack House. We didn't then, but it was an old shamble of a house that was about to fall down.
Well, it did fall down the week we moved out of it.
And like a week later, it fell down. Mm-hmm. I remember him coming on, coming there, and so many others. Well, it's been quite a week.
I'm just going to news. If people are wondering what's going on, we're waiting for our guest.
Yes, our guest hasn't arrived yet. So, and if we have no guest, then we're our own guests.
And Jeremy is with us also. Feel free to jump in, Jeremy. I'm looking up gay news.
Okay, sounds good.
So, what's been going on with you, Jeremy? Just hanging?
Pretty much, taking care of the home front.
Well, it's good
ready
to see you.
Ready for spring to be here, and so I can water the lawn and plant some new flowers and... We have a lot of pansies that are coming back from the last plant.
You're one of those.
I don't know about that.
No, I mean like the green thumb thing.
Oh, yeah. I enjoy working outside in the yard a lot.
And they cooperate? Mm-hmm. Yeah, see, that didn't happen for me.
Ordering some new blinds. We had an invasion of flies, I guess it was last year, the large horse flies. One day that was in the house and there happened to be, I don't know, upwards of six, maybe 12 of them just flying around, and I was determined to kill every one of them, so I was running around smacking everything and I broke the blinds on the front windows and the blinds on the back door. And I recently replaced the back door, and the next project is getting the ones for the front window, which have to be custom ordered. But that's most of the excitement in my life.
Well, as you know, spring is coming, and for us in Texas, that means I always define spring and fall as when you can turn off all the AC and the heat and open the windows and doors and be totally comfortable and pleasant. And that's about 9 days in the spring and about 9 days in the fall. And that's it. And then it's burning hot and super cold.
Right. We need to get some screens replaced on a few of our windows so that we can do that. We removed some screens when we bought the condo and moved in because they had some fraying and they weren't very pretty to look at.
So you need them so you can open your windows and enjoy those 9 days.
Right. We have a great forecast this week in the 60s and 70s, so I'm looking forward to that.
Every gay nonprofit in the country needs to take notice of something that happened last week. And it's something that will likely put most gay organizations, most LGBT organizations, under a microscope when applying for federal funding. This is from LGBTQ Nation. Simply put, the Republicans have found a new way to go after our community, and that's by taking away funding from your local community center, your local LGBT health clinic, which Resource Center runs, Prism Health runs. So we have multiple health clinics.
We do, dedicated to health concerns in our community.
HIV organizations and especially LGBTQ youth programs. Any one of them could be on the hit list, LGBTQ Nation warns. To do that, conservatives have been using fake information. And Democratic senators fell into their trap. Maybe they won't after being fooled once. But defunded a $1 million grant for renovations to a community center. Let's see where that was.
Well,
I'm not sure where it was.
Well, I'm just going to go on to say happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody, because it's St. Patty's Day today. And in your good fortune, you have St. Patty with you today on the air.
All hail St. Patty.
I'd kind of like to talk about, if we can, this finding this week from the medical examiner in the case of Next Benedict. I was really...
That really is an odd...
It really makes me question so many things, that this young, non-binary student at a school was beaten to unconsciousness in a bathroom and died the next day, and the coroner has now ruled it, the medical examiner has now ruled it a suicide because of antihistamines and other medications found in their body.
So he might have died, or they might have died, of complications from medications taken. That doesn't make it suicide.
No, it could be completely an accident, and it could be a lot more involvement from those severe injuries from being beaten.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a very serious thing when you've had any sort of trauma to your body and it causes you to be unconscious, especially unconscious for any serious length of time, more than a few seconds. That's some serious impact on your body. That's not a trivial thing that your body just, you know, instantly recovers from, like some cartoon superhero.
Well, even just the emotional impact of being beaten up.
Yeah. And I just think there's more to it than a conclusion that all of that, their death was completely attributable to suicide. I just don't buy it. It's not plausible to me.
Well, you know, I could understand self-inflicted whatever is the actual cause of death, but contributing factors have to do with having been beaten up the day before by three girls.
It's just...
It was three against one in a bathroom. And the emotional trauma of that...
You think it caused Next to just down a bunch of medication and...
Well, since the autopsy is not clear, it could either have been that, or it could have been, like you're saying, the physical effects of that.
Yeah, you know, I mean, a lot of different, depending on what the injuries are, if you've had a fracture to your skull in any way, or if there are broken blood vessels in any way, and you take medication that may, you know, permeate outside that closed circulatory system, you know, who knows? But it's just traumatic and very disturbing to me. It's crazy. But on the good side of the news, the Gallup survey is out again, and nearly 30% of Generation Z women identify as a member of the LGBTQ community. 30% of Gen Z women. That's huge. 30%.
That is huge.
And I think that's really extraordinary. They found that 28.5% of women and 10.6% of men born between 1997 and 2012 identify as LGBTQ. That's tremendous numbers in terms of, I mean, they're surprising to me as a person who's grown up in a world where we all believed we were 10% of the population. And that's very true here for 10.6% of men born between 97 and 2012. But 28.5% of women born during those years, that's extraordinary.
How accurate do you think that figure is?
I don't know. They do it year over year. But at the same time, we have to remember, if you look at those Gallup polls year over year and graph the outcome by age group, those in the 65 years and over age are much smaller numbers. 3 or 4% will identify or come out to a pollster as LGBTQ, that they identify as one of our community. Whereas the younger folks have really high numbers. And so you see this graph that starts very high and goes low as you get older. But I think that's pretty expected. A lot of people 65 and older don't come out to a pollster. They don't want to come out to anybody they don't even know.
Well, that generation also lost a huge number of people as a result of the AIDS crisis.
Absolutely.
I mean, hundreds of thousands of people have died of AIDS.
And the hate that came with it. There were a lot of hate crimes going on.
Oh, yeah, hate crimes. But hate, the result of the hate crimes also is keeping people in the closet.
Yes, to keep them safe. Because they feel like that's the safest way for them to go through the day.
Plus, every study of senior citizen centers shows that when people go into senior housing, they very often don't feel safe, and the only way they feel safe is by going back into the closet.
Indeed.
So, while I don't really understand my generation not being out, I mean, I just don't get it. Every time I've talked to somebody about it, it's, if I have to go into senior housing and have to go back into the closet, you're going to have to teach me how to do it.
You're going to get so busted over and over.
Oh,
he's gay.
Completely.
You'd never make it.
You're right, I wouldn't.
You'd be that gay guy in the nursing home.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be you. There may be other people in there who are gay and who are closeted, or non-binary, or part of our community, but you would be that gay guy.
But I find it interesting that such a high percentage of this last generation, compared to the next generation next to them, which in some cases it's a one-year difference.
Right, but even then, the Gen Y below them and millennials have very high numbers. I mean, even millennial women self-identify as LGBTQ at a rate of 12.4% of the population.
But that's not 30%.
No, it's not. But I think what part of that is young people are really supportive of people being who they are. And it's nothing for a white kid to have all their best friends are not white. Or, you know, they're Christian and their friends are Jewish and Muslim, and that makes little to no difference to them. And they accept people all around them. And that's why I'm so hopeful that even though we face a lot of potential devastation politically as the small-minded right wing comes after us in legislative actions and fear-mongering, that, you know, the next generation coming up, they think a lot differently about how they identify and who they associate with and have friends among. You know, it's a very different attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm quite hopeful that we'll get through this.
You know, and it's a different attitude, but it's not different than my attitude, and I'm a couple of years older than they are.
Well, exactly. And my attitude, too, and I'm a few years older than they are.
Sure.
Yeah. But I think it's a wonderful thing that kids feel, or young adults feel,
but going
strong
back
enough
to my,
in themselves.
Going back to my original question, how many of the 30% do you think are actually in our demographic of LGBT? Probably a lot of them be.
Yes, I think a lot of women self-identify as bisexual. That's been true even with Gen Y and Gen X ahead of them. That about half the number is self-identifies as bisexual. But that's not to discount bisexual people.
I don't mean it to discount, but how many of them do you think are actually bisexual, and how many of them are more in a category of, I could be open to that?
Well, and then there's, you know, this joke of many years that somebody might be barsexual.
Yeah.
So a woman might get up and dance with another woman in a bar, but they don't really self-identify as bisexual. But that's again being dismissive of bisexual people, and I don't want to do that.
And I'm not trying to be dismissive, because I generally believe, or genuinely believe, that about half of LGBT people probably are bi. Look how many people, and I've had this argument with I don't know how many bisexual people or people who identify as gay who were married for a number of years,
mm-hmm.
lived a fairly happy life, but found that just wasn't right for them and ended up in a same-sex relationship. And, oh, no, I'm 100% gay. Well, that's not 100% gay.
Sure it is. Yeah, it is. It's called conforming
fluid.
To social expectations. There are an awful lot of women who are no question lesbians. Who started off married, had kids, did the whole housewife thing. And they are 100% lesbian.
Okay, we need to take our break. We'll talk about Jeremy's mom in just a minute. It's Barbra Streisand, The Way We Were. Our guest didn't show up today. And at the beginning of the show, we were talking about some guests that we had during the 1990s, including David Mixner, who a Clinton advisor who passed away this week.
Yeah.
But one of the things we used to do on the old Lambda Weekly was we played a lot of music, mostly gay music, and Barbra Streisand counts as gay music.
Especially Barbara.
So I decided to play something. I have my computer with me today.
And we'll be happy to hear another Barbra tune before the end of the show, if you so wish.
Okay, so, I was thinking Barry Manilow.
We may be able to squeeze Barry in.
Let's do the gay.
Barry Manilow is a segue from Barbra Streisand to Bette Midler. So I hope you have some Bette to follow Barry with.
I'm sure I do.
I think we just lined up a radio show at the end of the hour.
Okay, so before the break, we were talking about the millennial generation. About 30% of women identify as LGBT.
That's the Gen Z.
Or Gen Z.
Yeah.
Identify as LGBT. And about half of that 30% of Gen Z women probably identify as bisexual. And so I said, I think that's true of a lot of people who identify as gay or lesbian because they're in a same-sex relationship. But doesn't the fact that they were previously in a heterosexual relationship mean they have bisexual?
No, I don't think so. And that's each person chooses for themselves because they know themselves and they identify. That's who makes the decision how they identify. But there are a lot of sexual behavior does not drive sexual orientation. It's been proven over and over again. Otherwise, if a straight man goes into prison and engages in same-sex behavior with another man while he's incarcerated, that doesn't make him gay. When he leaves prison, he's still a straight man. Just because he engaged in some sexual behavior with some sort of sexual act. Sexual behavior does not drive anything about identity. It doesn't. Otherwise, what if you self-identify as a lesbian and you were raped? Sexual behavior does not drive
anything.
I'm
talking about voluntary sexual behavior, though.
Well, I understand that, but I'm just making the point that all sexual behavior has no connection to sexual orientation.
Well,
a lot of women got married because their society expected them to. Their parents expected them to. Maybe they were out, conforming with society's expectations and got pregnant as a result. So the thing to do was to go ahead and marry and raise your kids. And then they were like, no, this isn't me at some point and was done with it. And they are still lesbians. They're not bisexual. I think that's perfectly true. And gay men all over the map marry. And it doesn't make them bisexual because they were married at some point and had a kid. They're gay, gay, gay.
And I guess I'm comparing to somebody like me who it just wouldn't have worked.
Well, I mean, I think you were probably more, you were less controlled by societal expectations and norms than almost anybody.
I think I fit in just fine. Let's ask our resident expert. Okay, so Jeremy, your mom came out at what age?
Well, let's see. I can remember when I came out. I mean, I always knew from the time I was little that
so
I was
she
gay.
Came out after you?
Yes. In fact, for a while there, I kind of blamed myself, but it wasn't when my parents got divorced. But that was long after I left home. I would say at 18, 19, I started to. I remember calling my parents and letting them know over the phone and being real upset about it. And my mom like, I always knew. And my dad, they didn't really say, it wasn't that big of a deal to them, really. But
well, because your mother's
later,
a lesbian.
Yeah, years later. And, my parents, they had me young, but they were already married. And I was like the China doll. My mom, if anything ever happened to me, she was just like flip out. And my parents were married for like 24 years or something like that. And they got divorced and my mom became a lesbian. She's been with her partner now longer than she was married to my dad. And she raised all of us just fine. We're all great kids. I'm not saying that I'm the smartest person in the world, but and my mom's been with her partner, Jackie, for well over 20-something years. Looking back, growing up, there were some times that I may have kind of caught the, you know, the elephant in the room, I guess, so to say, right, where she was dealing with those issues, but she may have always kind of known, but she didn't look the right thing by raising the kids that she had. And,
So, did she wear, like, sensible shoes all the time?
My mother used to dress to the T, very, very feminine, high heels, skirts. She was always very involved in the church, was a church secretary, always a very religious person, still is, prays and believes in God and everything. But she is who she is, and I love her no matter what, so.
But you don't think of her as bisexual, you think of her as lesbian.
Right.
See, yeah.
And I guess where I have trouble understanding, and it's not a matter of trouble accepting if somebody tells me that, you know, what they are. I certainly agree with you that people have the right to self-define.
Yeah.
I have trouble understanding somebody who was in a relationship for 2 decades. Your mom was in a... was married for 20 years?
More than 20 years.
To a man.
People can do the heterosexual thing and still be gay. I mean, this happens by the millions around the world all the time and has for millennia.
And I guess I just don't understand how.
I think it all kind of goes because back to society and some religious beliefs with some people and trying to do the right thing because you don't want to be rejected or... And they, you know, do the best they can. You have kids, you love them, you try to make it work, and you raise a family, and I guess it gets to a point after, with just life, that you just decide that, hey, this isn't right for me, and I've always had these feelings or tendencies, and now I'm just going to decide to act upon them and do what I got to do to be happy.
And it may be, you know, David, you would never be able to be with a woman. I accept that. That's fine. But I think there are people, both male and female, and non-binary, who are with another person, and that connection, for whatever reason, does not define in their sexual behavior between them, doesn't define who they are. I mean, it just doesn't, you know, anybody can do any
and
sort of
I
sexual
understand
act.
In cases where it was a happy marriage, your parents get along. Mm-hmm.
There was quite a few years that they didn't speak at all, just because of the hurt that was involved. But it got to the point where, especially recently, when my dad had a heart surgery. He didn't have a heart attack, but because of the surgery, it prevented that from happening. Double bypass and a valve replacement, and my stepmom. So during that time, I was able to, I called my mom every day and communicated with her, you know, how my dad was doing and whatnot, and was able to get them to communicate with each other on the phone. So that was kind of nice. Prior to that, I don't think they really talked much at all.
But I think there is, I think we'll see less and less of this as we go forward. And that may be what's accounting for all these numbers we're seeing come out of the annual Gallup survey. But at the same time, I mean, over our history has been that gay people oftentimes don't even understand the word for it or say, oh, that's even a possibility, because of the overpowering societal pressures to, for example, you know, women in the 40s, 50s, 60s, many, many women, including my oldest sister, were raised in a way that she understood that her only path forward was to get married and be a housewife. That was so, so heavy and pressing upon her that she did not see anything else. Her parents were going to give, her parents, my parents, our parents were going to pay for her to have one semester in college. This is in the 60s. And that was essentially so that she could go find a husband on campus. It wasn't for her education, because none of the expectations and driving forces that governed norms in those times and what was expected of you had even included the word gay or lesbian or anything. And so many people who, let's face it, if 30% today of women self-identify as LGBTQ, can you imagine applying those numbers to the 40s or the 50s or the 60s? It didn't happen. It would be like 0.1% of women, because they couldn't even fathom, they couldn't even conceive of what that might be, or that it was even a possibility. It wasn't even on the radar.
Okay, so I guess this is where our family differences become apparent.
Yeah.
My grandmother graduated from college in 1913. Now, she and my grandfather got married later that year, but my mother went to college, graduated in 1939, and went on and had her own career.
Well, and that's really, really cool. I'll tell you, there's a lot of young people in the South, especially in the South, who were women, and they were finishing high school, and they fully understood that that was the end of their education.
Well,
had no expectations to go beyond that.
And my family was from New York. New York has a city university system, which at the time was free.
Now, a lot of women would, in the South and around the country, would go to take classes to be those very stereotypical, you know, professions, like a stenographer or a typist or some sort of secretary. Which, okay, I'm going to segue to this, because this made me crazy this week. There was a state lawmaker, and I believe it was in Minnesota, who was having a hearing in the state capitol, and a woman sat before him in her pilot's uniform and identified herself. She literally said the words, "I am a pilot for Delta Airlines." And this state senator, old, like white man, leaned into his microphone and says, "Tell us what your typical day is like as a stewardess." And I, okay, so let's use a term of yesteryear to refer to flight attendants.
Mm-hmm.
And it just flows out of your mouth. It just vomits out of your mouth. And she just told you she is a pilot.
But does she serve drinks?
I worked for the airlines. There were female pilots, captains, all the time. Female. In fact, when I worked at JetBlue, we had female duos, captain and first officer, both females.
It just drives me crazy that you know, and people say, "Oh, well, you know, this country's not racist." The hell it's not. And it's sexist as well.
Mm-hmm.
The sexism is just, you know, pours out everywhere. And it's just unbelievable to me. I was in a conversation on Twitter about it, in fact, where a woman who's a physician, points out this clip and plays it, and we talked about it, and several kind of good old boys chimed in and said, "Well, that's unprofessional, because there's MD in your name, so you're speaking as a physician. You're talking about being a physician, and that's just unprofessional." And I'm like, she's talking about women. She's talking about women everywhere. She happens to be a physician, but this story is about women, you know? And I don't get it either. It's like they don't even think. So that stuff drives me crazy.
Did you see the story? The first African-American airline pilot passed away this week.
Really?
Yeah, he was hired by American Airlines in the 1960s. And they showed the story on the news of a Continental. He wasn't a pilot. about a year before, Continental had rejected somebody who applied who was black, who was perfectly qualified, had flown in the Air Force. But the wording that they used was so demeaning. He didn't just get a letter that he was not hired.
Oh, wow.
It was...
They had to
be real explicit as to why they weren't hiring this perfectly qualified...
Black pilots have been around, the Tuskegee Airmen, weren't they all?
But they weren't hired by the major airlines after they got out.
But still, again, completely and totally capable of doing the job.
We need to take a break. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with the late Patty Fink. Our guest is Jeremy Holland. We'll be back with more right after this. Okay, that was Barry Manilow, Can't Smile Without You. Did you ever have a song that just gets to you? For some reason, I kept hearing that song after Brian died.
Oh, wow.
And I'd hear it, and I would just be driving in the car and just bawling.
I get that way with Bread, some of the Bread songs.
Oh, Bread is like a heartstring tugger, you know?
And no other Barry Manilow song does that to me, but that song just reminds me of Brian. We just passed 7 years since he passed away.
It's hard to believe it's been that long.
Yeah.
It seems like it was, you know, very recently. Still.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Okay, so the two of you, when I was cueing some things, were talking about something during the break.
Yeah, I was talking about the sexism in this country and about a case that happened in Iowa I believe it was in the aughts, in the early 2000s, mid-2000s of that decade. And I'm still appalled that it even took place. And it was the case of a dentist who had a dental assistant who was a woman, and she had been married, had kids, worked for him for 10 years. The dentist was a man who was married, and his wife was, desperately worried that he would have an affair with his dental assistant. And so she insisted that he fire her, and so he did. He fired her. And she took the case as an employment case up through the courts, and it made its way to the Iowa State Supreme Court. And they ruled that, yes, that he could fire her because she was a threat to his marriage, because he could at any time have an affair with her. And it was like a unanimous decision of all white men on the State Supreme Court. And I've always been just so...
That makes me wonder, that what would he do, replace her with another female hygienist? Or a male?
I don't know. But nobody was even concerned with this woman's rights whatsoever in any contour or peripheral thought.
Well, nobody asked her, were you interested in even having an affair with this guy?
Well, who cares? I mean, like, the thing is, she had no interest. No interest whatsoever. She had her own family. So there was an assumption among especially white men that women will just, I guess, bow down and submit to any man who wants to have a relationship with her just because he does?
Well, because he's a doctor.
Oh.
So he would have been better off with a hygienist who was not married and didn't have children?
I don't know.
Or maybe a homosexual hygienist would have been better.
Well, I don't use homosexual, but... I don't know what they expected, but what they did was say that women don't have their own autonomy, their own agency, and are not worthy of being an equal human being in the employment of their services. And you know, you couple that with what we see today with Dobbs and onward, it's just it's appalling to me that that men, and especially white men, and especially Republican white men, want such control of women that they can control where they're employed, for how long they're employed, under what circumstances they're employed, whether or not they have children, whether or not you know, they can control their own bodies, whether or not they have reproductive health care independent of men, independent of the state, and then they call it freedom. They're doing it for freedom, and it's disturbing in the most profound way to me. And I don't think there's any man walking who really understands what that's like. I don't think so. And it's hard.
And something you just said, I kind of got the IVF thing.
Right.
They want to control whether or not somebody has a baby. So somebody who doesn't want a baby has to have it. Can't have an abortion, has to have it.
Even in cases and of violence.
And somebody who wants to have a baby, you're not entitled to one.
We have yet to see whether they're consistent on that. Because
they're not consistent on it at all.
Because they're saying life begins at conception, then all of those IVF embryos that may be lost through maybe an act of God, like a tornado or a loss of electricity or, you know, whatever, and they're now dead. Is that murder?
Here's how murder? I think people should protest the Alabama decision. In Alabama, there was
Wait. Dobbs was Alabama, too. Wasn't Dobbs?
Was Dobbs Alabama?
Yeah, maybe Mississippi.
Oh, that was Mississippi.
Yeah, I think it was Mississippi, yep. Never mind. Sorry.
Okay, so in the Alabama case, they ruled that fertilized embryos, have the rights of people.
Mm-hmm.
Now, those fertilized embryos are kept frozen for how many years?
Varies.
But could be 10 years?
I think maybe they could even be done for 18 years, in which case, what happens then?
Well, here's what I think should happen. I think if I had some frozen embryos and they'd been frozen for 5 years, I'd be suing the state for the right for my embryo to go to kindergarten.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
If it's a people, at 5 years old, it has the right to go to school.
And they can vote at 18.
And do you add those years to their age? I mean, if there's an embryo inside a female body, it continues to grow, but if it's frozen, it just sits there.
They're 18 years old when they're born.
Right. That's what I'm wondering.
It does kind of change things up, doesn't it?
Makes sense to me.
So you would have to basically determine not when their birthday would be a different day.
My
cryo life date is from here, and then, you know, we have to start capturing that information in case it applies to somebody.
Right.
Can you imagine?
Definitely, you know, you can give them a social security number.
And do lots of things. We could, you know, they can vote absentee.
Well, if one of the reasons that the child or that the parents are doing IVF could have something to do with a physical disability on the part of the parent, one of the parents. And if the parents are getting social security, shouldn't the embryo?
And wouldn't embryos begin inheriting property lots of things all over the country?
Makes sense to me.
And you got to divide it by 10 because you have 10 of them?
It starts a lot of new hot topics.
You know, you really can't have it both ways. Either life begins at conception or it doesn't.
Well, they went more than that. They said they called the embryos people.
Right, I understand that. But their position on all of abortion is that we must have a ban on all forms of abortion because life begins at conception and you're killing this embryo.
Well, I believe this
embryo over here is also not protected. Or we want these embryos to live on as frozen embryos until such time as they are discarded or no longer needed. But that's okay. That's gonna, you know, you can't have it both ways. You just, they want it both ways.
Don't jump on me, but I believe that life begins at conception.
Okay.
But not, they're not people. It's a fetus.
Well, and that's...
But they specifically have said that these embryos are people. And calling an embryo a people gives them rights. And all these things that we just mentioned, the right to inherit, the right to go to school.
Well, corporations are people, too.
Well, that's true.
That's what the courts have decided that, too. So there's all kinds of people out there in our...
People who need people.
Another Barb song. Right.
We started the show talking about necks. And I found Necks Benedict, who was ruled, took their own life. And this was a statement by the executive director of the National LGBT Task Force, Kira Johnson. She said, the death of Necks Benedict and reports that Necks took their own life continue to break our hearts, frustrate us, and anger us. This also moves us to action. Every system that should have protected Necks and supported their education and safety did not do their jobs. And I think that's key to it.
I think it is. Why?
The people in schools that are supposed to keep kids safe did not do their jobs.
There was no reason why any student should be permitted to be beaten to unconsciousness by three other students. It's not, that's not acceptable. And I really don't care what your politics are or what your thoughts are about LGBTQ kids, unless you really think that all of us are subhuman and not worthy of being full human beings. But no student should be beaten up to unconsciousness by three other students, and that be okay with you. Yeah.
I don't understand why those three kids are not being charged with assault.
I don't either.
I understand why they're not being charged with murder. There's a question about whether they were directly or just simply indirectly involved in Nex's death.
But assault should be...
They'll definitely
but
get
assault,
their karma.
A no-brainer here, you know?
Why aren't those kids being charged?
Charged
as juveniles.
But charged.
But charged.
This is violence. You know, but, I mean...
Blame the parents for
we
allowing
have
the children to be that way.
Yesterday in Dayton, Ohio, former President Trump gave a two-hour rambling word salad speech, but also said if I don't win in November, there will be a bloodbath in this country. I'm like, you're condoning violence. I mean, outright, up, straight up violence. That's what bloodbath means. Mm-hmm. And that seems to be okay with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, if Joe Biden stood up and said, "There, you know, if I don't win, there'll be a bloodbath in this country," he'd be impeached overnight.
Yeah, I heard that this morning on Face the Nation, and Mike Pence was commenting on how he's not going to endorse Donald Trump. And
right, but I don't know the call for that violence is the solution if. You don't like something, you can be violent to get it. And that's what these kids did to Nex. They didn't like Nex, and they beat the crap out of them to the point where Nex was unconscious. And that's not trivial physical violence. That's very serious violence to make someone unconscious for more than a few seconds. And Nex was out. So, wow, wonder where they got the idea that they could beat somebody up and get away with it. They brought that from home.
Right, it was intentional and willful. That's what I was referring to as the parents.
Yeah.
They're raised and they're...
Well, I love the verdict against the parents, two verdicts in two separate cases of the parents of the Michigan shooter.
Right.
That they are responsible.
I think that's great.
I do, too.
I think something's got to change to make people really pay attention to what's going on with their kids and their thousands of weapons. Mm-hmm. Where are they all? Are they locked up? Can nobody get them? I think there's a lot of people across this country who have weapons out and readily available to anyone who might touch them.
When Columbine happened, the parents' excuse for their two little darlings who were making bombs in their house was, well, it's a large house. I can know everything that's going on everywhere in this house. Well, then you own a house that's too big for you to be responsible for.
I agree.
Where's your intuition?
I agree. If somebody could build bombs in your house and you not know about it, that's...
Where's your head?
Yeah.
Too big a house for you.
Yeah, and you shouldn't be responsible for a house then at all. If that kind of behavior can go on in your house. I don't know, the acceptance and encouragement of violence in this country, especially by people perceived as leaders, I think is just it's devastating, and it's beyond beyond the pale. It's got to stop. The rhetoric has got to stop too.
Well, for all of us here at Lambda Weekly, the next show is here, but they're going to be there'll be a minute before they can set up. So, let me do the top of the hour, and then we'll play a little bit of music.
Awesome.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas, the voice of the people.